Blog Talk Radio.
Rise and shine, for your light has come, and the glory of the Lord has risen upon you. A new day has dawned. All over the earth, men and women are arising. It's time for the sons of God to awake. It is a day of justice, recompense, restoration, revival, and resurrection power.
Hello and welcome to the Omega Radio Network. I am Vincent Xavier, pastor of New Wine Ministries. It's good to be with everyone today. As you know, we have a very special guest that is joining us today from Australia. And without further ado, I want to welcome to the broadcast Daniel Seckham. Daniel, good morning, good afternoon, and good evening, because I don't know what time it is where you are, but how are you today, sir?
I'm really well. It's actually midday here, but before I say anything, I've just got to say Happy New Year. We haven't actually had a chance to speak since the New Year, so I hope you had a wonderful Christmas and a great New Year, but it's absolutely wonderful to be back.
Well, Daniel, it's wonderful to have you back. It has been quite a shifting season. So much has gone on. From, you know, the holidays, Christmas and New Year's and birthday parties and becoming a grandpa and running a radio station and taking care of my beloved wife, Patricia. She went overboard, I think, and she's been on a 10-day sabbatical. So, you know what I noticed, Daniel? If men would just give it 10 days for their wives to disappear and then they have to run the entire household, what an amazing job they do. The wives.
Yeah, I get that revelation all the time. I get that revelation of just how much they make life work. It's an incredible gift that they have.
Yeah, my wife asked me the other day, she said, so would you want to do what you do or would you want to do what I do? And I said, I'm going to continue doing what I do and you get and do what you got to do. So... Well, you know, just moving forward here, Daniel, because we haven't heard from you in a number of weeks, I know that there are many things in your heart that we would like to share. And I just want to give you a quick take on what I was thinking about this supernova blood red moon. Well, I'm not putting a lot of stock in it, but what I have learned is that every time there's a sign in the heavens that it has to do with the separation between light and darkness. And I believe that beyond the tetrad, a blood red moon, solar eclipses, the Revelation 12 sign, that this last one was just a punctuation mark. It was an exclamation point that God is saying the division between light and darkness is going to be accelerated and upgraded in many different ways. And could you confirm in any way the things you see going on in the world that that is a reality?
Well, I don't put much stock into those things, but I'll tell you what is interesting about that whole thing is that that the blood moon was specifically for America. And that is really interesting, particularly because of what is going on in the country at the moment. Because the country, I mean, from what we have been witnessing, I mean, we're seeing incredible fracturing going on. There's fracturing that's going on within the nation, and the nation is continually tearing more and more apart. It's basically eating itself up. And one particular incident, which I think is very, very telling, with what actually happened with the Catholic student from the Coventry High School, that really gave you a glimpse into the belly of the beast. It gave you a glimpse into the totalitarian aspect of the left culture. It really helped you to understand the fact that they would go to any length and propel any narrative. And by the way, there are scores of videos of leftist kids provoking church people, provoking homeless people, scores of, but they don't get any attention. But the moment it surfaces of a kid wearing a Trump hat does it to a Native American, then all of a sudden it's primetime news. It even made it the news here in Australia, Vincent. It even made the news here in Australia. And, I mean, it just gives you a bit of an idea of just how brazen the media machine is in doing everything they can to propel their narrative and to destroy conservatism, to destroy the Christian influence upon Western civilization. That is really their agenda. It got exposed big time because it was all completely fake. He was provoked. The Native American activist intentionally singled out his victim, intentionally singled out this particular student wearing the Trump hat, MAGA hat. He went and targeted him and isolated him and got in his face. And yet, of course, they selectively showed parts of the story, and the activists made up what he wanted, and the media bought it. They bought it wholesale without actually doing any more investigation. It's only now later where media outlets have been forced to apologize, and they've been left with egg on their face. But it gives you an insight into what's actually happening within the culture at the moment and how the media establishment is absolutely, hopelessly, and utterly captured by the left. You know, it's interesting that Wolf Blitzer, the CNN personality, said a few weeks back, it might have been a bit longer than that, but he said that CNN stopped reporting the news a long time ago. So in other words, what he was saying is that they basically have taken on the role of being activists and abandoned the role of being objective reporters. So this is the state of the culture at the moment, and this is really significant because the left basically dominate what I would say would be the major pillars. They have all the major what's another word for trying to think of the word for the bullhorn, yeah. Trying to think of the word for the amplified speaker thing that people speak through at protests.
The megaphone.
Megaphone. Yeah, they have all the megaphones of culture. That's exactly what I was trying to look for. They have all the major megaphones within Western culture. So one of those megaphones is Hollywood. They have got Hollywood. You know, every time you watch the Academy Awards, it's like over an hour of virtue signaling from these Hollywood elitists who are telling everybody else what's right and what's wrong and what they can celebrate and what they can't. So they own the megaphone of Hollywood. The other megaphone that they own is academia. That is a big one. So a lot of what you see actually happening in culture now was actually formulated within your universities years ago. See, probably about 20 years ago, what was formulated in the universities took about 10 to 20 years before it actually happened in culture. Now it's much shorter than that. Now universities, they cook up these crazy ideas and they emerge into the mainstream of culture within a year later or even less than that. So, and this is extremely important to understand because Western universities, especially the universities within America, they are the culture formation institutions. They are culture formation institutions, and they are completely and utterly dominated by the left. You know, Dinesh D'Souza said that there are more Marxists in our elite universities than there are in all of Russia and Eastern Europe. And he was absolutely correct about that. And the same thing is happening here in Australia. Just recently, last year actually, there was a student who spoke with Andrew Bolt, who's a personality, he's a conservative personality here in Australia, and the student said to Andrew Bolt that on his first day of attending university, the lecturer said, he says, my job is to ensure that every single one of you adhere to Marxism and that you become good Marxists. I mean, that gives you a bit of an idea of just how brazen they are now. See, years ago, they would have hidden that agenda. They would have tried to do it covertly. But now they're saying it right out in the open. They're saying that their job is to basically convert people into being committed leftists. They see their role. They are more interested in producing committed leftist activists than they are in giving students good job prospects. And this is why you have these university graduates who have graduated from courses such as women's studies and they can't get a job. Whereas someone who went to a trade school is earning over $80,000 a year. So there is a lot of cognitive dissonance that's going on. So that's one of the other megaphones, that academia, they run academia. And of course, one of the other big ones is the media. The left have completely captured the media. And part of the problem is because the schools of journalism are in academia. So if you go to study journalism at a university, because the university is already captured by the left, then of course, what viewpoint are you going to get? I mean, you're going to have a liberal viewpoint. You're going to be pushing a liberal narrative. And this is part of the reason why all these years later, the major institutions, the major megaphones have all been captured by the left. And this is why, but we need to ask the question, what is the heart of all this? What is the heart of the issue? Why is all this happening? Why has there been a sudden shift to the left side of culture? And there is a practical reason, but there's also a spiritual reason. The practical reason is you can basically talk about all the Marxist figures that have been working tirelessly, such as, you know, Gramsci back in the 1920s and on to Lukács and then the Frankfurt School, and then you can talk about Saul Alinsky and all the radical leftists who have been working behind the scenes and eroding the foundations. But they have done that with an intent to bring America down, to erase the American Revolution with a socialist revolution. But there's also a spiritual reason behind this. And what is the spiritual reason? It's because America is slowly turning her back on God. America is turning its back on God. And it's not happening all of a sudden. This is a transitional thing. This is a transition. At the moment, America is transitioning from a Christian nation to a post-Christian nation. And all of the chaos that we're seeing happening in society is all part of the transitioning process. You know, And so is what we are to expect. This is what Alexander Solzhenitsyn said when he wrote in his book, The Gulag Archipelago, when he said that when he studied the reason why Russia had swallowed up tens of millions of its own people, and he said, when I had surveyed all why this had happened, I had come to this point. He said, men have forgotten God. That is why all this has happened. Men have forgotten God. And this is exactly where America is facing at the moment. And see, at the moment, when you get rid of God, when you remove God from the substructure of any society, they won't admit it at the moment, but there is a gradual moving away towards relativism. There is a gradual movement towards relativism. Now, Christian values are still there, but they are relied upon whether they realize it or not. Most people, even though they don't believe in God anymore, still go by the Christian values. Okay, but then there comes the process where when they basically ask themselves, well, why do I believe this? Why do I believe this is the case? Why should I really have to go by that stealing is wrong? You know, because then here comes the thing. If the leftist utopia, this idea that everyone will be equal and everyone will be happy, there'll be no more billionaires and everyone will have what they have to survive. If I can get this utopia, if I can play a part in bringing this into reality, then what lie would I not tell to bring that happen? What lie would I not tell? What would I not steal? What would I not corrupt? What would I not do to bring that to reality? And so that gives you a bit of an idea into the corroding away of the Christian values within society. They would rather do anything that they can to bring about their utopian dream at the expense of law and order. And this is why Marxism and anarchy, or Marxism and the lawlessness, that's what I was trying to say, Marxism and lawlessness go together like peas and carrots. Marxism and lawlessness go together like peas and carrots. You know, and it's so true. There is no inherent desire for any particular laws if you're trying to bring about your revolution. So America needs a lot of prayer at the moment. America essentially needs a great revival. Because there's nothing else that can do except if it has a great, great revival. Now, I just want to share with you just a few things in regard to what we talked about in regard to anarchy. Ronald Reagan said this. He said, freedom prospers when religion is vibrant and the rule of law under God is acknowledged. Freedom prospers when religion is vibrant and the rule of law under God is acknowledged. That basically is the cornerstone of a civilized society, because you have to have morality that is objectively based, like a morality that is transcendent, a morality that transcends all human opinion. Because if you don't, then you come back to the situation in Judges where it says, in those days there was no king and everyone did what was right in his own eyes. That is really the heart of the issue. And what becomes on the throne of men's hearts? Self. Self becomes enthroned upon the thrones of men's hearts. That's what actually happens. Now, Charles Spurgeon said this. He said, atheism is the mother of anarchy. Atheism is the mother of anarchy. The reigning power of God exhibited in true religion is the only security for the human commonwealth. He said, a belief in God is the foundation and cornerstone of a well-ordered state. Isn't that interesting?
Well, it certainly is. And I was just listening a little bit earlier today about the number of atheists that remain in our country. And do you know that the number of atheists is down to 3%, which means that there has been a spiritual exponential growth where most people today are claiming a spirituality, but without faith in Christ. In other words, all of us are gods to do what we will. And so they're replacing the Almighty God with ourselves being God, and therefore the left can push its agenda because we little gods don't want to follow any biblical, religious, you know, obedient structure of things, and we're not going to have to give an account to the Almighty God because we're gods. We give an account to ourselves, and if we desire to do it as a God, we do it. And so to them, this is a brazen blasphemy against the Almighty.
Yeah, it certainly is. And as I said before, this is all gradual. This is all happening very, very slowly. But a lot of it is actually going on in the colleges. See, the college professors actually have an agenda from the very beginning, from the moment that they have their very first class. He tries to find where all the Christians are and single them out and ridicule them. And it really becomes like that. And basically attacks their values and basically very, very seductively and very cleverly says, well, how can you say you're a Christian if you don't care for this? And basically gives a bunch of different talking points, leftist talking points. You know, it's no mistake that the left have their own version of compassion, which is what they call social justice. You know, social justice is it's basically addressing the so-called injustices, addressing the so-called injustices of capitalism, which aren't really the case at all. But this is basically what it is. It's to address the so-called injustice that Christianity and capitalism have created in society, which they basically is a bunch of lies. Actually, Dr. Voddie Baucham really said this really well. He said, if the social justice movement went by its actual name, young Christians would not have been lured into it. He said, because the social justice movement is actually cultural Marxism. There is no such thing as social justice, people, he says. In fact, in the Bible, justice never has an adjective. There's justice and then there's injustice, but there's not different kinds of justice. I mean, that was so very well said.
Amen. Amen. It certainly is. Ladies and gentlemen, if you're tuning into the broadcast right now, we are on the air with Daniel Seckham. He's calling in from Australia. We haven't heard from him in quite some time. And he's giving us quite a download of, you know, again, the atmosphere, the pulse of what's going on within our nation and around the world. And as each one of us understand at this time, there are things that are happening both in the realm of light and in the realm of darkness. There is a thrust, an acceleration, a movement forward in both realms. And that middle ground, that valley of decision moment, is really going to get shaken up until people make a decision what side of this moment they're going to live on. And Daniel, let me just ask you this. In the last month or so since you've been out there, what has been the mainstay of what you're doing? Have you just been moving forward in studying? Have you been out there on radio broadcasts, television? What are you doing with your ministry and your time?
Well, that's a very good question. And the answer to that is I've been a bit of a hermit. I've basically been hiding away, doing my own little thing, and I've been doing a bunch of reading. I've been reading an excellent book written by an Australian, actually, his name's Dr. Fred Schwartz, and the book is called You Can Trust the Communists to Be Communists. And this was actually written back in the 1959, I think this was written. He wrote it in the late 1950s. It was published in 1960. So I've been reading that. I've been doing a bunch of other different things. I've been focusing on my websites, Israel, Islam, and End Times, and Culture War Resource. I gave both of them a website upgrade. Just doing a lot of that, doing a lot of prepping, doing a little bit of writing. As you know, I'm still working on that book, which is taking a long time, but it is getting there. And just being really thoughtful and prayerful in regards to what this year holds, and just preparing my heart for what God has in store.
Danielle, if I understand a number of things that you've been talking about, and for we're talking for well over a year now, and on tonight's broadcast, I'm to understand that the progressive left, leftism as you call it, is a philosophy, and it is a spiritual philosophy, but not everybody really sees it as a spiritual philosophy because it does have the connotations of Marxism, and it has the communism and socialism.
Yep.
And this is a spiritual movement, isn't it?
It very much is a spiritual movement. And the fascinating thing about this particular movement, in fact, I'll just see if I can find this. What I think is particularly interesting is that it really has its roots that go all the way to the book of Genesis. And Fyodor Dostoevsky, I can't really pronounce his surname that well, but he said this. He said, socialism is the Tower of Babel, built without God, not to mount to heaven from earth, but to set up heaven on earth. Isn't that an amazing quote? I think that's extraordinary because that's exactly what it is. What does the Tower of Babel in Genesis 11 represent? Well, it represents collective secularism, or should I say secular collectivism. It's secular collectivism. In other words, it's man coming together who have rejected God and saying, let us build for ourselves a utopia. And that's in our Bible. It goes all the way back to the Tower of Babel. And you know what's interesting about that particular passage in Genesis 11 is that they rejected the call to be scattered. See, God intended the nations to be scattered all over the face of the earth. But they rejected that. They wanted to come together to be communal, where the word communism comes from, to be communal. And they wanted to basically melt all their differences together so that they could become ones. And this is really the heart of leftism, really, is anti-diversity. They want a monoculture with one mind and one thought and one purpose and one agenda. And that's what the whole narrative of the Tower of Babel is, that they come together and that they reason, they thought, if we can come together, nothing would be impossible for us. We will be able to do anything through our collectivism. That is exactly the spirit of the left that's happening, that is appearing in the last days today. You know what's significant about that? Because one of the most important keys in regard to understanding biblical eschatology is actually found in the book of Isaiah. Correct me if I'm wrong, Vincent, but I think it's Isaiah 30 verse 10. Sorry, I'm getting that mixed up, where it says that I will reveal to you the end from the beginning. Am I right about that?
Yes, let's look at it real quick. You said it was Isaiah 30, 41?
Yes. I think it was Isaiah 30, verse 10. I could be
okay,
wrong.
Okay, so let's take a look at it. Isaiah 30, 10, and let's see what it says. I think that does look pretty good. Let's go, and it tells us, which say to the seers, see not, to the prophets, prophesy not unto us right things, speak unto us smooth things, prophesy deceits. That's not it, but that's a darn good scripture.
Yeah, so just to summarize, God says, I will reveal to you the end from the beginning. So how does God reveal to us the end? Well, to understand the end, you need to go back to the beginning. And this is why the book of Genesis is such a crucial book in understanding the end times. Because at the very beginning of the book of Genesis, you find God walking with man, in a garden. And what do we find at the very end in the book of Revelation and Revelation 22? Well, we see God that has come down from heaven and has made his home with man and walks with man in a garden. Isn't that extraordinary?
Yes.
But what happened? What caused sin? Well, Satan tempted Eve and says, and said, you could become like God. He said, did God really say, that? He just knows that you can become like God. And that essentially really is at the heart of the whole philosophy behind Marxism and leftism. You know, because Karl Marx himself said, he said, my object in life is to dethrone God and to destroy capitalism. It really is the dethroning of God and the enthroning of self. So let's move on from that in Genesis chapter 1, 2, and 3 and move further on, because then we get to chapter 11 where it talks about the Tower of Babel. So we've gone from where Satan tempted Eve and said, listen, you can become like God. And then we come to the Tower of Babel where man is tempted to become like God again. They want to do it by their collectivism. And really, there are examples in the art of leftism. The temptation to become like God and the temptation to come together through collectivism to accomplish a utopia. That is really, really critically important to understanding the philosophy with what we're seeing emerging in these last days. Because we're coming back. Remember, God reveals the end from the beginning. If you understand the whole philosophy behind man's agenda, then it's all in the book of Genesis. Just like that Dostoevsky said, socialism is the Tower of Babel built without God. That really sums it up eloquently and sufficiently in a nutshell. And what actually happened to the Tower of Babel? Well, the Tower of Babel was destroyed and it came down. You know, in the book of Revelation, in Revelation 17 and 18, we see a city destroyed. And the name of that is Mystery Babylon. Mystery Babylon. We see a major city being destroyed in the same way that all those years ago in Genesis 11, we see Babel, the Tower of Babel, coming down. So we see that God frustrated the attempts of man to come together through secular collectivism. And what happened was, well, he then scattered them across the face of the earth. And what else did he do? He divided their languages. He gave them different languages so they couldn't understand each other. So that was the way that he forced his ordained diversity. Diversity is a healthy thing because, in the millennium, it will be the nations that will come to bring praise and honor and glory to Jesus. It will be the nations. We will be reigning of the nations. But Satan has a satanic plot to completely destroy the nations and to mold them all into one, to have a monoculture. See, you've probably seen many of the leftist activists hold up signs where it says F borders and F nations. In other words, they don't believe in borders and they don't believe in nations. Again, this is the whole agenda that goes back to the Tower of Babel, where you remove all nationhood, remove all national identity. And this is what the satanic agenda wants to do. God instituted nations. And what's fascinating about that, Vincent, is that I believe in the book of Deuteronomy, God set apart the nations. He numbered the nations according to the sons of Israel. God numbered the nations. He set up their boundaries according to the sons of Israel. Isn't that fascinating?
Absolutely, it is. You know, I just want to interject a thought here to what you're saying in the conversation. It's so interesting that just as they failed in the Tower of Babel, that all of these things from every religion, every bit of Buddhism, Hinduism, philosophy, leftism, spirituality, whatever you want to call it, they're all bound to fail. And that is so sad that people cannot see that failure. They're going to put their whole life into and energy and time and finance and just all they are into something that's bound to fail. And would to God people would wake up to that. But I wanted to ask you this, just a little bit further reach into the nations. Right, you know, we know what happened in Europe, that big Brexit thing, and there was all that upheaval and turmoil, the Islamic invasion that went into the European continent. And, you know, there was just a terrific amount of terrorism and Islamism and so on and so forth. And now we're looking south of our border here in America, and we're watching what's going on in Venezuela. A new caravan is coming up from Honduras. We saw the Guatemalans come through. You know, the little battle going on with Mexico and the United States. What does this all represent from the perspective that you're introducing?
Well, I'm glad you brought up with what's happening at the southern border, because that's really, really important to understand. You know, once upon a time, and this is what's interesting, is that Obama, Schumer, and many of the other Democrats were actually very, very much for strong national borders, including Hillary Clinton. Hillary Clinton was also about that, and they were all very much against illegal immigration. But something, all of a sudden, things changed. And things have changed for a very important reason, is because the leftist movement is becoming more global in its scope, more global in its agenda. And they are thinking more globally than nationally than they used to. And it's, see, if you can, having a weak borders actually helps the left tremendously with their agenda, because what it does, it dilutes nationalism. If you bring in millions upon millions of undocumented migrants, illegal immigrants into your country, what that serves to do, it helps to dilute the national identity. It dilutes the national homogeneity, if I can say that. It dilutes its the national identity. Every nation has its own identity. Every nation has its own sovereign identity. And this is what's really, really important to understand, because nationalism has been a lot of bad press. In fact, nationalism has been demonized over and over and over and over and over. But the truth is that nationalism is healthy. It is absolutely indispensable for a nation. If you have a nation that doesn't have an identity, then you don't have a nation at all. This is what's really important to understand. Now, listen to some of these things that Karl Marx says. Karl Marx said, take away the heritage of a people, and they are easily persuaded. This is the other part of the agenda, because once you dote a national identity within a country, then you can easily persuade them and hence easily manipulate them. See, there are three pillars that really is a bulwark against socialism, against communism in any particular way. The first is national identity. The second is, the first one is the identity you get from your country, which is the least important out of the three. The second is the identity that you get from your family. And, of course, the most important one is the identity that comes with Christianity in regard to the church. So the communists, the leftists understand that if they want to have a people who are easily led, that they can easily manipulate, they need to destroy nationalism. They need to destroy the family, to break down the family, to get them dependent on government and not their own family. And this is why Hillary Clinton said it takes a village. It takes a village to raise a child. You know, but then you also have to destroy Christianity, and that's the biggest one. That's the most important out of the three. Christianity has to be destroyed, because ultimately, you know, people naturally drift towards leftism when they abandon Christianity. You know, this is why, you know, atheists such as George Orwell, people are astonished when they learn that George Orwell, who wrote 1984 and who wrote Animal Farm, they're shocked to discover that he he was called himself a socialist. And the reason is simply because he's an atheist. So he still believes that a socialist utopia can be brought about because he doesn't believe in God. So those are the three pillars that must be dissolved with. So there is like this realization, this globalist realization among the left, where they now believe that they need borders completely. They need to get. That's why they will not lift a finger to fund the Southern Wall, because they see it as a great benefit to them. These migrants can come in, and it's not just any one particular reason. It's multiple different reasons. I mean, the second reason is that these migrants create agitation. They are lawless. They don't have any value for American law and order. And so, but this creates agitation, and when the agitation makes the people feel insecure, so the people cry out for security, and the government says, okay, we'll provide that security, and government expands in the process. Now, the other third thing why it's extremely important to the left is because migrants naturally vote left. Migrants, by default, always vote left because they will always vote for a party that will give them stuff for free. They want free stuff. They want welfare. They want handouts. They want health benefits. They want free housing. So who is it that's going to give it to them? Well, it will be the leftist politicians, the leftist parties that have power, which is the Democrat Party. So, and this is why, again, they want as many migrants flooding into the country as they possibly can. So to summarize those three things, first of all, it dilutes nationalism and makes the people more easily to be manipulated and controlled. That's what I'm looking for. Secondly, is the fact that that they always vote left. And also, too, they create agitation. They create agitation and lawlessness, which makes the people cry out for more law and order, and the government, the state expands and becoming more and more of a police state as more lawlessness occurs. So that gives you a bit of an idea into why it's such a big deal to the left now to fight against nationalism and to fight against borders and to fight against national identity.
Daniel, do you believe that there are, from different nations around the world, obviously, where leftists, socialists, communists are inspiring, you know, that movement within our nation? Are they equipping it? Are they supplying it? You know, where is all of this instruction coming from, this vitality, this vim, this vigor that is on the left, this outrage? Is it just coming from Bill Clinton and Hillary Clinton, Barack Obama, or is this an international movement of people outside that want to see the devastation of the capitalist Christian country overwhelmed?
Yeah, well, definitely, number one, you have to start with George Soros. I mean, George Soros is probably the biggest troublemaker in the world right now. And why he hasn't already been dealt with, goodness me, that is probably one of the biggest questions that needs to be asked. Why he hasn't been arrested and put away, because he is the number one. Him and his Open Foundations, his Open Society Foundation, is probably one of the most pernicious, the most insidious organizations operating in the world today. And what's fascinating about his particular organization is that they are now working with the Iranian government. So the Open Society Foundations is working openly with the Iranian government. And this was admitted by the Iranian foreign minister just last week. It was revealed. So George Soros and his organization are prepared to work with any organization that can play a part in this international agenda to bring down America. And so for another example was the organizations that were behind the caravan. See, the media talked a lot about the caravan that was coming up from Honduras and through Mexico. but they made very, very little discussion about who were the organizations that were funding it and who were the organizations that were organizing it, the logistics side of it. And it was basically came down to an organization. I think if I remember correctly, they were simply called No Nations or No Borders or something like that. But they were one of the major organizations. And, of course, this particular organization was funded by Soros. So Soros has his finger in so many different organizations. He has a multi-billion dollar budget in which he is prepared to fund with his money all these different organizations and front groups, front organizations. He also was funding many of the different protests and riots on the streets, including with what happened in the protests in Charleston, Carolina, North Carolina or South Carolina, and also many of the other different protests that have been happening. Also, Antifa, there's another big one. Antifa is also an international organization that has now found its roots here in America. What's fascinating about Antifa is that their history goes all the way back to communism. They were basically the brown shirts equivalents of the Communist Party. And here's another interesting thing about that is that many of the brown shirts in the Nazi Party were all originally communists. What happened was is that when Hitler's version of socialism became more favorable, and basically they routed the other communists within Germany, they basically switched sides. In fact, what they were called, they were basically called the Marxist stakes, or I think I think they were called something stakes. In other words, they were brown on the outside, but they were red on the center. They were red in the center. In other words, they were the brown shirts working for Hitler, but in the center, they were red. They were communists. So this all goes back. Antifa, basically the founder of Antifa was he was a leading fascist. He was a devout Marxist thinker and philosopher. It all goes back to that. And what's happened ingeniously over the past 60 years is that they have successfully convinced the mainstream that right wing represents fascism and Nazism, which is probably one of the biggest deceptions, one of the biggest lies that has ever been told. And it all goes back to Frankfurt academics such as Eric Fromm and Herbert Marcuse, who were the ones who did all their dirty work in trying to convince the American. This all happened in Columbia University when they fled Germany and came to Columbia University, and they started to convince people that Nazism and fascism is to be right wing. And what actually happened was is that the major megaphones of the left, including academia, Hollywood, and the media, all began to parrot the same assertion. And this is why we now have come to this ridiculous belief that Nazism and fascism is right wing, which really is ridiculous because we know who the founder of Marxism is, which is in Karl Marx. You know, we could arguably say who represents capitalism with John Adams, but who is the founder of fascism? Well, the answer to that is a person that nobody has ever heard of, and his name is Giovanni Gentile. Giovanni Gentile is the founder of fascism, and he was a devout Marxist. He basically was a socialist himself. He was a Marxist philosopher. And this is why Giovanni Gentile has been airbrushed from history. He has been removed from the history books, especially the books found in college libraries, because he basically destroys the narrative that fascism is a right-wing ideology.
Names we've never heard of, movements that we've never seen of, or now everything's coming around us. You know, sometimes I think that we are all being bamboozled in the sense that, you know, on television, you turn on the TV and you have this boxing ring going on with Chuck Schumer, Nancy Pelosi, and the president, right? And there's 800,000 people being affected by a government shutdown for 32 days. And, you know, and it's like a good boxing match. When the guy you're voting for, you're rooting for, he lands a punch, everybody goes, yeah. You know, when Trump told Pelosi, you're not riding on the Air Force, airplane. Yeah. And then Pelosi and Schumer come back and they swack out at the president. And there's, and as well, millions and millions of people are glued to the tube watching this. It just seems outside in the quiet zone, there is something else going on. And with all that you've talked about here tonight, what again is the answer to the Christian community?
Well, the answer to the Christian community is that we have to get back to God. We have to, we've got to bring about repentance. Now, here's the troubling thing about that is that the church in America has never been as weak as it is right now. And there are a bunch of different reasons for that. There's been a lot of compromise. There is a, how would I say, there was like an epidemic of pornography within the church, even among Christian leaders, and this is wide-anting. This is completely compromising the foundations, and this is what has caused to silence the church. And as the saying goes, when the church becomes, when the church loses its voice, the world loses its conscience. And so the spiral down into immorality is a direct result of the church losing its voice. And so if we can recapture the church's voice, if we can recapture the church's zeal, if we can get back to having the pulpit aflame with righteousness, as Alexis de Tocqueville actually said in his book, we need to get the pulpits of America to be aflame with righteousness once again. We have to return back to God, because if America doesn't return back to God, then we're just going to see more of the same, and the polarization is going to become more and more prominent, more and more pronounced, and more obvious. And one of the things that's interesting, Pastor Vincent, that has actually caused this polarization is social media. Well, not just social media, but also, even I would even say things like YouTube and Netflix, because people can now choose what they want. See, 20 years ago, 30 years ago, we could watch TV, and we just had to watch a channel, and we just had to watch whatever that channel had to dish up. You know, we didn't really have, you know, we could kind of choose which channel what we wanted, but we didn't really, you know, we just had to watch what the television stations had to offer. Now we have so much choice, and we have so much freedom to choose the narrative that we want to listen to. You know, with Facebook, we can like a particular personality or a particular organization, and then we get what they have to say appearing on our news feed every morning. The same with Twitter. The moment you follow a particular individual or person, you constantly get their point of view appearing on the Twitter news feed over and over and over and over and over. So what's happened is that through these organizations that have been built by capitalism, is brainwashing the populace into this collectivist thought. People have now finding themselves in these massive echo chambers. And this is why there is such a polarization. Whereas a distinct, stark difference between those on the left and those on the right, you know, the right-wing conservatives and the socialist and the left. And by the way, the Economist magazine revealed some very fascinating statistics. And what they revealed is that they discovered that as time has gotten on in these last couple of years, the left is becoming more and more left. So the left is becoming more and more brazenly embracing of Marxism and socialism. That is cause for massive concern. What's even of a massive concern is that it's the millennials. It's the young people embracing this wholesale. And again, this goes back to academia, which is one of the megaphones of the left in which they have successfully been able to brainwash America's young people into accepting these corrosive ideologies. So this is where we find ourselves. We really have got to come to a point where the Christian community needs to come before God in prayer and fasting, prayer and fasting, to break the stranglehold that the left has on American society and American culture. It's our only hope. Our only hope is a revival, and that people can wake up from the slumber, because there is a madness that's going on in society at the moment, and you have to be blind not to see it. There is this stupor that the American culture has found itself in. And by the way, the word stupor is very closely related to the word stupid. Stupor and stupid come from the same word. Yeah. And that's because there has been a dumbing down where Americans have become, and not just Americans, I'm seeing it here in Australia as well, where we have become so intellectually inept. So we can't even grasp reason, basic reason and basic logic anymore. And this is why ridiculous madness has descended upon our society, where men can identify as women, women can identify as men, and that gender is just a social construct. This is the level of madness that we have come to.
And Daniel, with that level of madness around the nations of the earth, let's talk for our last 3.5 minutes here, which is more deserving of 3.5 hours. But many are believing that the third temple is going to be built in 2019. These are reputable people. They've spent some time in prayer and studying, and it's around the world. And there seems to be, because of what happened last year with the embassy going to Jerusalem, and some movements with the temple, how important is the third temple, as we understand it, being built as a centerpiece of time?
Yeah, well, that's a good question. And, you know, one of the most, if there was ever a civilization that had stark correlations to America, it would definitely be the Roman Empire. And you might think, well, isn't this changing the subject? Well, it's not. I'm going to get back to the temple, because I need to explain what was the Roman motivation in commissioning Herod to build the third temple. Well, the Roman motivation was this. They basically rubber stamped the building of the third temple because it was a symbol of Rome's tolerance. It was a symbol of Rome's religious tolerance. And Vincent, I've got this feeling where I believe that the building of the third temple will be rubber stamped, not just by Israel unilaterally, but it'll be rubber stamped as a symbol of tolerance, in the same way that the Roman Empire actually rubber stamped the third temple. So I believe that it will go ahead eventually, and it will be rubber stamped because of tolerance. There's also other people who are saying that it will be brought about through a international incident. Could actually happen. I mean, if Israel basically finds herself in a position where she has no more allies, and that's exactly what Jeremiah says. Jeremiah, I think in chapter 31, where it says, God says to Israel, where are your allies? You have none. You know, your allies are all gone. And so I think if Israel finds herself in a position where she has her back against the wall and she has no more friends, and it doesn't matter what she does, she's just going to get international outrage anyway, then that would be a scenario in which you could go ahead and build the temple. So there's that scenario. There's the other scenario I mentioned in regard to, you know, it could be a symbol of tolerance. But one thing is for sure is that the blueprints and the plans are already in place. You know, the Temple Institute, you just have to go to the Temple Institute website to see how advanced those plans are. It's not a matter of if it will happen, it's a matter of when it will happen.
Amen. Daniel Seckham, we need to talk more about the temple, Israel, Islam in the last days. You have once again blessed our listeners with the information and the revelation that you're sharing. I want to thank you for joining us on the air. Tell us real quick, where can everybody get to your website?
Well, IsraelIslamAndEndTimes.com. You can see my website there. Also, DanielSeckham.com. I haven't updated it that much. I haven't been writing as much as I need to be. And also Culture War Resources had a major upgrade, and I've got more people writing for the website now. So that's growing. But that's how you can get a hold of my stuff. So also too, yeah. So also, just pondering in regard to my next American trips, and so definitely coming in August. So we'll be doing a national tour when I come then. So yeah, so lots of things in the pipeline. That's how you can kind of get a hold of with what I'm doing. Also too, if there's anyone out there who's interested in funding my new project, which is building a website in Farsi and reaching Iranian Muslims or Shiite Muslims, if you're interested in that, then please get in contact with me, because I'm looking for people who can partner with me with that.
Very good. Very good. Daniel Secomb, just look up his name on the internet, Daniel Secomb. You're going to find everything he's talking about. Make sure you reach out, a call. Daniel Secomb, thank you for joining me on the air again. God bless you, my dear friend in Australia. Keep yourself safe and healthy, and we will see you again real soon.
God bless.
All right. Ladies and gentlemen, that's it for tonight's broadcast. Daniel Secomb. This broadcast will be on the Omega Radio Network throughout the week so that you could tune in oftentimes to hear what was presented. Until we meet again, this is Pastor Vincent Xavier with New Wine Ministries, the Omega Radio Network. God bless you.